Welcome to Rabbit in Red Radio. Oh, shut up, Mike. This is going to be something a little bit different. This is going to be part of our Death Wish Week, where it's
Death Wish Week. Da-da-da-da.
Death Wish every single day. So, God, I hope you're ready for that. I hope you have enough alcohol. So, yeah, this is
but
not.
These are going up in the morning. People can't drink in the morning. Probably
with this series, you may need it. All right, so here's the thing: it's not going to be a normal episode. We are simply going to focus solely on an entry of the Death Wish series, dive into it, discuss it, and be back the following day to do it all over again. So,
right. But do you have? Remember, we have a surrogate Death Wish film that you're including in this as well. Or I don't know if surrogate's the right word, but
here's what I was thinking, Mike. We'll run through the Death Wish proper series, and I was thinking
five.
I was thinking once those six films are done,
five.
We could do a regular episode kind of recapping our thoughts on the series and also cover Death Sentence, which is basically a pseudo Death Wish film based loosely off from the sequel book Death Sentence.
Oh, so you were thinking of doing it that way. I was thinking of doing it like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Death Sentence because it's still good probably, and then the shit, which is the Bruce Willis Death Wish.
Now see, as the last. I went into this open-minded. I'm going to need you to go into this open-minded. Also, I'm going to need you to watch it, or I'm just going to start doing these on my own.
Well, because think of what I'm saying. If we do the remake Death Wish last, okay, since it would be on Sunday, which is also Easter, right? Now, Easter is about the birth of the Savior and the risen resurrection, right?
So yeah, it's not about his birth. It's about him rising.
That's right. That's Christmas. My fault. Way that it works is, think of it, if we use the Death Wish reboot for Easter, then that means that if it's good, then Bruce Willis came in and resurrected the Death Wish series. See, it's his resurrection.
And my whole thoughts on it, Mike, was that we would simply cover Death Wish, do a regular episode kind of talking about our thoughts overall, and cover the final film, kind of like a setup for what we're going to be doing in the summer, where we do a regular episode, but focus on a film in that episode.
Yeah, well, that's a different segment within that episode.
Right.
I see what you're talking about.
But we'll hammer that out later.
You're a brilliant motherfucker.
Thank you very much. So, let's, Mike, why don't we start things off? Why don't you play the trailer, and then we'll begin.
Oh, God. Oh, wait, no, this is the good trailer. I'm sorry. Here we go.
Enjoy a typical afternoon in New York City.
Groceries, man.
My name is Paul Kersey. How's my wife?
I'm sorry. She died a few minutes ago, Mr. Kersey.
Any chance of catching these men?
There's a chance, sure.
Just a chance.
I'd be less than honest if I gave you more hope, Mr. Kersey.
This is Paul Kersey. This is the story of a man who decided to clean up the most violent town in the world.
Listen, turn around. Hand me the money.
He begins where all the super cops leave off.
Mugging has gone down by how much, sir?
$9.50 a week to $4.70, you reported last week.
You understand not too many people know that.
And you want to keep it that way, huh?
Oh, no, we have to keep it that way, Inspector. This whole city would explode.
And if this person is listening to my voice, I urge him in the name of law and order to desist from this one-man crusade and turn himself into the police.
Let's see the money, man.
Call him a mad vigilante. call him a hero. Either way, he's always on target.
We want you to get out of New York. Permanently.
Never make a death wish. Because a death wish always comes true. And you get to love it.
All right, and that was a brilliant fucking trailer. See, now that is a good fucking movie. I watched this the other day, and I get it. It's fucking so good. I'm sitting there, and I'm like, you know what? Even looking at the poster here, as I'm looking, I'm staring at Bronson, and he's holding that gun, and it looks like he's turned looking at that black thug, and he wants to just shoot the black thug and watch the black thug roll down the fucking steps. That's what he wants.
Wow, that's not racist at all, Michael.
I didn't say the N-word. I said black.
That's because I yelled at you before.
Oh, right. Well, I never said the N-word in the first place. I said the W-word. That's different.
Okay, so before we really dive into this, I think it's kind of important for this one to talk about the production before we really talk about the film, because I hadn't seen this since VHS days, probably around 12.
VHS, fuck you. You never watched it.
I did, because it was so talked about. It was whispered about. It's infamous because, you know, it's so brutal and this and that. So, of course, I watched it.
I'm whispering about it.
I had almost no memory of it, and after I watched it, I had to do a little bit of research because, we'll get into that, but I want to talk about the production right now. And Mike, you can chime in at any point that you have something on the production, but obviously this is based off from a book, but here's something that you may not know if you haven't read the book. Yep. The book is actually anti-vigilante. So...
The film is
seeing
anti-vigilante
a
too, though.
Let's debate that in a tiny bit, all right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
It was originally supposed to be a Sidney Lumet film starring Jack Lemmon as Paul Kersey.
And they also wanted
Henry
Steve
Fonda.
McQueen. Steve McQueen.
Well, here's the thing. Henry Fonda was supposed to play the chief of police, but Lemay chose to do Serpico. And that caused Lemon and Fonda to drop out. You know, they went after several actors because everyone knows if you get that lead
right,
the rest of it will fall in place. Right. You know, Steve McQueen, there were tons of big actors at the time.
Yeah, but I don't think any of them could have did, you know, what Johnson... Well, I mean, not Johnson, Bronson did.
Well, here's the thing. They couldn't get any of them. They did end up and get Michael Winner as the director, who brought on his friend, Charles Bronson.
Yes, brilliant choice.
Then Mr. Winner chose to rewrite the script.
Oh, so there was a different script entirely.
And I actually think that's a little evident throughout this film.
So it was not originally intended to be as violent. They were going to make Death Wish PG rated.
The ratings was a little bit different back then, Mike, but
PG would have been what it is.
It was supposed to, from my understanding, it was supposed to be, you know, Jack Lemmon as the Everyman and really his struggle with this, but it was going to be just opposed to Henry Fonda trying to track him down. So we were going to follow both equally, and we were going to see the impact that a vigilante has not only on him but kind of the city.
Right.
Okay. So it was going to be almost Oscar bait, you know, that huge drama film. And instead, we got Michael Winner and Charles Bronson.
You say that like it's a bad thing. I don't really like your tone there.
Okay, well, let's just dive into the film.
Yes, please.
We start off, and you've touted this scene before, where Paul and his wife's in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And we're just kind of so established in his relationship,
it's
right?
It's so cute and so adorable, and his fingers are... They're so nicely manicured. I was like looking at them, and I envied him. And then the way he was with the camera, just taking the picture, it's like, holy fuck, dude, you are creating art right here on that beach.
Um, I wasn't blown away by it. However, I thought it was a nice scene, and actually,
and
this was something.
His bathing suit was amazing, by the way.
This was actually something that Winter added, and I think it's the right choice. It really establishes the family and lets you know kind of the understanding. They did a decent job with that. I can't take anything away from that.
Right.
You know, we get back. They don't really set up the daughter at all, and you kind of struggle to understand who she is. Mm-hmm. But we are also introduced to mid-70s New York City, and gotta say, that's one of my favorite parts about this film, is just kind of that time capsule of 1974 New York.
74 New York.
Yeah. And I have to say, even before we really move on, I'm not sure how old Mr. Bronson was in this.
I'm trying to think, because it was 74, right? And I believe he was born in 1918 or 1919. So let's do the math, and I can't really do that too quick.
But either way, that beach scene, he's in really good shape, especially for mid-70s.
Right.
And an architect? I mean, that's mind-boggling. I mean, I can't think of any architect. Well, I've only met one. But
oh, he was 52 in Death Wish.
So he was 52 in better shape than I am now at 34, or at least a little more slim.
Well, that's because, you know, he could wear that turning heel shirt that you wear to the gym and, you know, be good at it. You just wear it as, like, you don't even deserve to wear it because you've never even seen Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I don't care that much about meth, Michael. Anyway, that just kind of surprised me right off. All right, so let's jump straight to what everyone is... heard so much about. We get straight to the attack.
Now, do you realize that by the time 13 minutes rolled in the film, that rape scene was already, like, happening? And I was like, ooh. Yeah, because, see, I remembered, because, like I told you, when I was a teenager and I used to, you know, get really off on the daughter when they were doing that. And, you know, you have to realize that it's like you're hitting at that, you know, at that point. So it's like 13 minutes in. Whoop. You go to 14 minutes too far, 15 too far, 13. Start slow-moing it.
And right here's where I have a little bit of a problem. Mm-hmm. I have no problem with, you know, hitting us quick with it. I think there should have just been a tiny bit more setup. I mean, we get who the goons are. We don't really even understand who the other person is with Paul's wife. And no reason whatsoever that they follow him. There could have been throwaway dialogue of let's rob these bitches.
You
There's
know why
nothing.
They followed him. Yes, you wait. You're telling me that
no,
you
no.
Missed.
I have to assume why. There's
no
reason. Did they go there to rape him? Did they go there to rob him? Did they go there? There's no reason given. None.
Okay.
There could have even been a quick establishing shot of a bunch of fucking cash as she was buying groceries.
You missed it, though. You missed it, though. Because what happened was, no, they saw him in the grocery store, and that guy was freaking out, going like, and he's fucking freaking out like a lunatic. Then he saw their box of groceries, and, you know, he pulled the slip out, and he saw the address.
I saw that. There's no reasoning why, though, Michael. They don't tell us why.
Okay.
It's just like, oh, look, there's bitches. Oh, there's an address. We're going to go here.
Well, they assumed that they were hot bitches, which, okay, I'll give it. The daughter was a hot bitch. The wife, not so much. But, you know, they wanted some. So that's why they took the address and they went and they followed them.
All I'm saying is an establishing shot or throwaway dialogue, this could have been made a tiny bit better. That's all I'm saying.
I think you're being a little too picky.
However, we get straight to the attack. It's pretty decent. I guess
pretty
it's just
decent. No,
dude, in this day and age, it didn't faze me at all.
Well, I gotta tell you what I don't.
And the whole fact
that
it's talked about rape. She wasn't raped. They spray painted her ass, and Jeff Goldblum tried to get a blowjob.
Jeff Goldblum was going to feed her his manhood,
but he didn't.
He tried to, and then she would have bit it off. And you know what? I'll tell you what: tagging her asshole like that—that was brilliant. Okay, because you just don't see that in films of today. No, we don't. I think that we need more asshole tagging. Hashtag asshole tagging.
And I just think...
Hashtag that bitch. But I gotta tell you what I did not appreciate. Before the attack, when they were walking in the hallways and fucking spray paint, you don't tag walls like that in an apartment building. What are you, a fucking animal?
Yeah. I don't know. I guess at the time period, that was very shocking. Just for today, it's not. So it didn't really faze me. And then later throughout the movie, as the daughters just...
If Goldblum started mouth-fucking her, that would be, you know...
That would have just been more jerk-off for you and your weird obsession.
That'd be shocking. That would really be shocking.
Yeah, it just kind of loses an impact on me, at least. I mean, I've seen The Devil's Rejects. This doesn't faze me at all.
But Devil's Rejects did not have ass tagging.
That was gross. That was icky. That was what this is made out to be, this scene. The fact that the daughter's institutionalized for the rest of the film, I think's a bit much, but I go with it. I can go with it. And then we get Mr. Bronson coming back and discovering what has happened. You know, he gets the phone call, they go to the hospital, and you know, I guess he tries to act, but we really don't see any emotion from Paul, really.
What are you talking about, no emotion? You can clearly see emotion. And then when they're at the cemetery and it's snowing and there's his hair's all covered in snow, that's real emotion.
What emotion? He's just standing there talking to his daughter. Nothing.
Yeah, but the daughter wasn't talking like she was. She's fucking catatonic at this point.
Yeah, but there's no emotion by Bronson.
Yeah, but there is emotion.
You could have put a mannequin there and you would have got just as much emoting out of him in that scene.
No.
Now, maybe when he got the phone call, and a little bit at the hospital, you see a little bit, but honestly, for finding out that his wife is dead and his daughter's catatonic, there's very little impact. It's like,
but he's trying to be strong for the daughter because, look, if you break down,
he hasn't even seen her yet. I'm talking about the phone call and the hospital. Those were his most emotive scenes that we've seen so far.
Yeah, and it was brilliant.
Brilliant. It's like he got stung by a bee.
No, because if you got stung by a bee, you'd be like, ah, fuck, motherfucking piece of shit bee, I'm going to rip all the honey out of your ass.
I don't even think you would. I think you'd just look at it. But
maybe
here's the
gun and shoot it. That
here's the thing that I've come to realize, and somebody smarter than me has said it, so I'm not even going to take credit for it. But when it comes to films, there are two types of actors in the world. Actors that embody the character and take us on an emotional journey, right?
Yeah.
And then there are quote unquote movie stars that come in. And they do the exact same performance in every film.
And he did not do the exact same performance in every film because he was different from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 to 5.
Well, we'll get into that. But for this one, I think we get a Charles Bronson performance where he's the everyman, he's the tough guy, he's the badass.
Right.
And then he's asked to be emotional and an everyman, and he just can't do it.
No, but he totally can. He's being a more subdued emotional, but yet emotional still.
Okay, my father is the toughest fucking person I have ever met. He's been paralyzed for 3 months, taught himself to walk again. I've seen him have multiple injuries and unfazed by it.
Right.
The day his father died, he cried.
Right.
Charles Bronson just either A, is an emotionless machine, can't act. He's asked to do something that he cannot do. And that's how I take this, because we're watching scenes that should be emotional, and Charles Bronson's just like, why is it taking so long? It's taking so long. She's dead?
But
she's catatonic. When can I see her?
Right, but because he's doing that because he's trying to stay strong. He's trying to play the strong, silent type.
He's trying to act and
he's being the strong, silent type. That's exactly what Winner wanted him to do, and that's exactly what he did.
Oh, no, we'll get into Winner. We'll get into that piece of shit later.
You don't like him at all, I guess.
From watching his three films here?
Yes.
No. But we'll talk about him at a
He's
later
done
date.
More.
Right now.
Yeah.
I don't care to see it. So throughout this, Paul's kind of emotionless, and we don't really get to see any impact that this has had on him.
Right.
At all, in my opinion.
Okay. Now, do you blame that on Bronson, or do you blame that on the fact that Michael Winner may be a bad director in your point?
I think the problem is that this script was written for Sidney LeMay's film.
Right.
And then Winner and Bronson came in and had to change it so it would work for them. So this was not written for Bronson. This was not written for his acting skills. And they had to kind of come in and adjust this the best they could. And they still had to have some of these scenes because, obviously, they make sense.
Right.
It was already established. It was here. They need those scenes.
Right.
Bronson could not pull them off.
I disagree.
Oh, Mike, I'm going to come down there and shoot your mom in the face. How are you going to react to that?
I would be like, thank God you took a great burden off of my hands.
Okay, and then I'm going to revive Donald Pleasance.
Uh-huh.
Let you see him. Say hi, Donald. And then I'm going to rape him and shoot him in front of you.
Could you tag his asshole first?
Yes, I will.
Then I would proceed to take the gun, shove it down your throat, and shoot you so hard that the bullet will fly out your asshole afterwards.
Would you be angry? Would you be yelling? Would you be crying? Would you have any kind of fucking emotion at all? Because Charles Bronson doesn't.
You would cease to live anymore. And I would put myself, well, I could go to prison because you killed Donald.
Okay, so we're going to move on. Because I think right there, that little bit of anger in your voice demonstrates my point that there should be emotion. However, Paul gets attacked. He has the roll of quarters in his sock, or his two, whatever. And, oh my God, this is honestly, this is his worst acting in the film.
Oh, and by the way, I'm just going to side note for a second. Did you notice the blood in this movie when people got shot? It looked almost like the Blob was oozing out of their wounds.
It's like bright red.
Yeah, it's the Blob. It's the Blob.
It's 1970s blood.
It's Google the Blob.
70s blood. Anyway, I like the idea. I like the attack. Bronson just can't. Again, he can't act to show the problem that his character is having.
Well, you know what? He shouldn't have to act, because if that was Bronson in real life and he wasn't acting, he would have killed the motherfucker.
He would have, but right here, you know, he's being asked to have this.
Well, that's Winner's
this
fault.
This issue
then.
Of a major character, because, you know, we have already established that he is a pacifist. He doesn't believe in violence. You know, he was a conscientious objector in the war, blah, right. blah, blah.
Yeah.
And he has to attack this guy that could have been the person that attacked his family.
Right. So then you see, there you go.
And he gets the most emotion we get is shaky hands to the face, right. slaps him with the quarters.
Right. But again, see, you are contradicting yourself. Because again, okay, he was a conscientious objector. We get that. So, then that means that he would really not be into, like, you know, coming and, like, hauling ass off on somebody just because he doesn't like violence.
And that's what I'm saying. Right here, they're not, trying... You know, with this scene, they're trying to show that, Mike. They're trying to show right. the change in character.
Exactly.
Except all we get is... hands to the face. I'm gonna slap you now.
Right, and that's yeah, but because that's
not
what
acting.
He does no, that's what he does. That is acting. It's
putting
how he
your
was
hands
supposed
to your
play.
Face yes. is not acting.
Yes, it is.
That's Winner. Like, okay, Charles, you need to show us the drama here. You need to show us the emotion. You're gonna change. This is the moment you go into killing mode. How do I do that? Show us. That you're scared and then confident. How do I do that? Just put your fucking hands to your face, Charles, and then slap him. Gotcha.
And he did. And then did you notice after that, okay, and after that, Oh my god,
that scene where he's celebrating back at his house, swinging the sock around. That is almost laugh out loud funny.
It's something. I mean, I liked it though, because it shows that he is a man to be reckoned with.
It does not.
Yes, it does.
I do kind of appreciate that he celebrated a tiny bit, but it was funny. And then comes Winter's biggest misstep to me in this film. We suddenly lose any momentum in the film and go to Arizona for how long, Mike? 10, 15 minutes? 10 right. minutes?
Yeah, but that's not losing momentum. That's him getting the gun and being shown.
Oh, my God. This was so bad.
It was brilliant.
So much chunky dialogue about, out here we just shoot them. Your city's full of scum.
It just sets it up. Oh, well, my. New York is
that is not setting anything up. That's, here's our plot. Yep.
Yeah, well, that's what you're doing. You gotta hand feed the audience, because the audience is stupid.
Here's what I say. Mm-hmm. This should have been before the first attack, and it should have been a montage to cut down on a lot of that stupid talk. Mm-hmm. The best part should have been included, though, the shooting range, where we actually established those things about Paul. That he was a pacifist, that he was in the army, his family history with guns, why he's a good shot, all that. That was a great scene. The rest of it could have been streamlined a lot.
Well, then maybe they should have had like a montage with like the Death Wish like theme, like
yeah, and cut out all the old West bullshit. That was fucking stupid.
Well, no, that's a tribute to Bronson's Western work.
We didn't need it.
It was totally needed. Just as a tribute. You need that tribute.
All right. And then the crazy cowboy that, for whatever reason, wears shooting range glasses all the time.
Yeah.
Gives Charles a gun.
That was the best in the world. I love it.
Such a fucking weird thing. A guy shows up to help you do some work, and then after a month, you're like, here's a gun.
Yeah. Thank you.
I've never been to Arizona or Arkansas where people fuck their cousins, apparently, because who the fuck just gives a general acquaintance a gun? Like, I kind of like you. Here's a gun.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, honestly, this film was made by somebody not American, just what they think America is.
Right.
America has a lot of guns. Of course, you just give gun as present, right? Jesus Christ. All right. So, past that horrible misstep. This is where Death Wish really kind of kicks off. Paul goes back and he starts using himself as bait to kill people, right?
And the best was when he vomited after the first kill. He's like,
yeah, I'll give you that. Like, it's showing the journey of the character.
Yep.
And that's why I said
vomit scene.
That's why I said, you know, The first attack should have came after Arizona, so we could have seen the step where he goes from the quarters to the gun, and he goes from being happy to throwing up.
Right.
We just get a smoother through line with that. But anyway, here's my biggest problem with this. Paul has no purpose. He has no focus. He's just an aimless psychopath killing machine.
Mm-hmm.
He's not out for revenge. We don't get any clues of him trying to track down those people or anything. He's a fucking psychopath in this. That's all it is. He's just fucking killing scumbags. That's it.
He's a vigilante.
That's not even vigilante, really.
Yes, it is.
He's a fucking psychopath, Michael.
No, he's not a psychopath, because he's not killing good people. He's killing bad people. That makes him a vigilante.
I get it if there was a little bit of focus, if there was something. All he does is he walks around until somebody tries to mug him or something like that, and then he just shoots them.
Yep. Brilliant. It's brilliant.
That's not even storytelling.
It is, because you're telling a story that if the guy gets fucked with, he's going to fuck with the people right back, and that's exactly what he does. Shooting those motherfuckers on the subway, shooting those motherfuckers in the fucking... the guy that was going to, like, give me the money, give me the money, give me the money, and boom, fucking dead, bitch.
But then, you know, the police come in, and I actually have to say I kind of enjoy the police parts. I think the captain, I believe he was a little over the top in his performance.
No, he was golden. I loved him.
But I enjoyed that, and this is really where the original script kind of shines through. You get that, really, it just kind of comes down to Bronson being a psychopath. He finally meets up with a mugger that has a gun. Psychopath vigilante. Meets up with a mugger that has a gun. Mm-hmm. Gets shot. Tracks him down. And then tells him to draw before he passes out. And then, of course, you know, the police, actually not being morons, catch him. And because his actual... Vigilantism. Yeah,
that's because his acts
as a vigilante have actually affected the crime rate. The commissioner and everyone in New York don't want him caught. They want the myth of this guy out there to persist.
Yes.
Okay, I can kind of go with that.
Mm-hmm.
So they let him go, but here's my question for you, Mike, because you're a fan of this film.
Yes.
Why is Paul obsessed with Westerns suddenly out of fucking nowhere? He tells this kid to draw, and then he's asking the police, do you want me out by sundown?
That was great. I love that line.
I just kind of sat there. I was like, what?
You laughed at it, didn't you?
I didn't laugh.
Laughed at it.
I did not. I was shocked. I didn't know if he was supposed to be kind of drugged up or if
I think it was meant to be facetious. I think he was joking around, honestly.
Just kind of like fucking with him?
Yeah, that's what I think.
Okay. And then, of course, we get the setup for the follow-up of, you know, get the fuck out of our city. He does. He goes to Chicago.
And the best is when he's in that fucking airport and he sees those fucking scumbags in the airport and he fucking goes and he does the fucking gun with his finger. And I'm like, yes. He has that look on his face like... here's Chicago, and I am going to clean you the fuck up.
And, I mean, I guess if you've been on board with it so far, you're pumped up by that, because, you know, that's just set up. Paul's going to keep going. He's going to keep killing.
I was like, yes. And see, by the time I saw this, there was already a 1, 2, 3, and a 4 out. And obviously, I realized that. So when I saw this, and I saw this end, I'm like, yes, I am pumped for this next one. I am pumped. I am amped. Let's bring it the fuck on, please. Thank you.
All right, Mike. So let's kind of get into our overall thoughts. And as I told you, I'm going to do my Letterboxd score.
Your shittered box.
All right. So overall, this isn't a bad movie.
Did we even mention that Jeff Goldblum, this was his first film?
I didn't say it was his first film, but we did mention that he's trying to get a blowjob in it.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's right, duh. And I do think that, you know what would have made the movie even better? If she did get to suck him off, that in the process of the sucking...
You already made this joke.
No. I'm not talking about the throat fucking. That's great, but I'm talking about in the process of the sucking, if he would have just turned into the fly... I think that would have, you know, added to the,
Okay. Anyway, back to this one. As I said, this isn't a bad film. My problem with it is that it's aimless, you know. If it would have been more focused on the journey of Paul.
It was,
and how this affected him.
Totally missing.
I could go with it, but. Here's the thing. The script was for that. They tried to change it a little bit, but for the original script, for what of it is still in here, Charles Bronson is miscast. He cannot pull off those dramatic scenes. To me, this movie's kind of a mess, man. It changes the book because it was anti-vigilantism, and this one, the movie, they're clearly pushing that it's a good thing. Overall, this film feels like it half wants to be a very serious, dramatic look at New York City and its problems, and the other half just wants to be this exploitation, rape-filled, shooting bad guy movie. And that it's so weird that it's in the middle there.
It mixes both perfectly, though.
It doesn't. It feels like a mess because it's in there. For me, this is 2.5.
Not quite
at 3.
It's 3. So, it rounds up to 3. In TV Guide, it rounds up to 3. So I am giving it a 3. Or I'll quote yours as a 3. You can say 2.5, but I'm saying 3.
I'm saying 2.5. That's what I rated it. Mike, 3. What would you give it?
5.
5. It's perfect. There's 5. Nothing at all that you
if
would change
I could,
with
if
it.
If I could go over 5, well, I told you I would make the changes that he turns into the fly as he's getting sucked.
All right. And I hope everyone enjoyed our Death Wish discussion because, well, it only gets worse from here, people.
Well, that's what, you know, maybe that's John's perspective. But my perspective, it's going to get so much better. We're going to Chicago, bitch. We're going to Chicago.
All right, so please stick with us throughout this Death Wish special.
That was horrible.